Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, this is Logan Gage for the CSC out in Washington, D.C. As the congressional debate over embryonic stem cell research reignites after the Easter recess, few will recall the passing anniversary of another great bioethics debate. Only one century ago, eugenics, the attempt to improve the human race through better breeding, was all the rage in the scientific world. And this spring marks the centenary of the world's first forced sterilization law. One might guess that such a law was passed in Nazi Germany, but they'd be wrong. In the spring of 1907, the Indiana General Assembly passed a bill designed to forcibly, quote, prevent procreation of confirmed criminals, idiots, imbeciles, and rapists, end quote. And then Governor Frank Haley signed it into law. Several states followed suit, and by the 1930s, 30 states had passed similar laws. Unfortunately, as these laws became more common, forced sterilization spread to the loose category of feeble-minded. In the end, tens of thousands were sterilized against their will, many of whom would likely not be deemed mentally handicapped today. And the states were not the only culprits. All three branches of the federal government advocated eugenics. In the run-up to the Immigration Restriction Act of 1924, Congress relied heavily on eugenics arguments and even heard testimony from an, quote, expert eugenics agent, end quote. The intent was to restrict the access of Italians, Jews, and other people deemed defective to American shores. In the executive branch, Secretary of Agriculture James Wilson promoted eugenics through the American Breeders Association. And finally, not to be outdone, in 1927, the Supreme Court, and specifically Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., famously upheld a forced sterilization law in Buck versus Bell, proclaiming, quote, three generations of imbeciles are enough, end quote. This verdict legitimized the state of Virginia's decision to sterilize Carrie Buck, considered to be a threat to the species for only attaining a sixth grade education and having an immoral mother. Eugenics was supposedly the science of human breeding. It was promoted by luminaries of biology at Harvard, Princeton, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. It was, in short, the consensus view of the cultural and academic elite. But how did things get so twisted? The acknowledged founder of the eugenics movement is Francis Galton. Through an examination of the British upper class, Galton tried to show that talent is largely hereditary. As eugenics ideas spread, it was not much of a stretch for Indiana's General Assembly to believe conversely, that, quote, heredity plays a most important part in the transmission of crime, idiocy, and imbecility, end quote. While modern Darwinists may wince, eugenics clearly drew inspiration from Darwin's theory. In fact, Galton was Darwin's cousin. He took evolutionary theory seriously, arguing persuasively that hospitals, mental institutions, and social welfare all violate the law of natural selection. These institutions preserve the weak at the expense of the gene pool. In the wild, such people would die off naturally, thus keeping the human race strong. As Darwin himself declared in The Descent of Man, no one who has attended to the breeding of domestic animals will doubt that this has been highly injurious to the race of man. Hardly anyone is so ignorant as to allow his worst animals to breed. Defenders of Darwin note that he insisted that we could not follow cold, hard reason on this matter. But as Galton and other eugenists reckoned, if the human race is truly in jeopardy, strong, even harsh measures must be taken to preserve it. In America, only the horrors of the Holocaust broke this chain of reasoning. Consequently, eugenics died out. There are many lessons to be learned from the history of eugenics. Foremost among them, perhaps, is that we can do great evil in the name of compassion. This has been Logan Gage for the CSC in Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening to the ID the Future podcast.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.